Thank you. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here tonight. So I want to thank Joan Bauer and Chris for sallying on with all the good work and inviting me and the other poets. And I want to thank Anna and White Whale too for hosting so many poets and events. It's a special moment, the re-emerging Hemingway series. And I remember being a reader and guest poet from CMU all the way back in the 80s, from the beginning with the last appearance in 2019. There are many stories to tell, but I want to tell them in the poems. My theme also is rescue and gratitude. And several of these pieces were first read, I think, at Hemingway's. So the last sentence that I want to say as a sentence is that the Times on Sunday said writers and readers are expecting a more fulfilling existence as the world reopens. And if that is so, this is certainly part of it. So I'm going to start with a poem called Ode to the Piano. And behind me is a poster. And the poster was sent out by Jimmy Civetic as part of a sponsored night on odes. And they were odes that Jimmy and I had written in tribute to Pablo Neruda. And there was a special reader at that time too. So Ode to the Piano, and it's a celebration of what is still with us in this life, though it is not a new poem. Ode to the Piano. So sing to the presence within wood, the etude waiting to be drawn from a place once silent, the tree waiting. O maker of things, how did you imagine a finger, a key that would take us from small rooms in the Bronx, in Brooklyn, in Indiana, Pennsylvania, back to the forest, to Vienna, to the Dordogne, and to the farmer in moonlight and snake charmers and agony of the lovers playing against the rules. Against the wall, the instrument of intimacy stands in silence, waiting for touch, but a piano, unlike a person, is not doomed. Pianos are patient, beloveds, cannot be known unless someone sounds them. And remember your own first living with the ultimate, the inanimate. It started with the teeth of the piano. It started when our father filled our lives with boogie woogie in his ear and tune. It started with his piano, larger than two children, who went under in that house in a flood. The true vocabulary of piano is our life. Chords and scales, grand and upright, Steinway and Yamaha and Baldwin, all friends, Cage and Debussy and Chopin, working them from the inside to the outside. The history of musical instruments starts with play, someone's playing, a touch, a love affair that enters the beyond, beyond treated wood, elephant ivories, the hammers. The power is in getting to the end, hearing and knowing piano speech in many languages. There is one we might know together, no words, no translation, only players. The final note is inside. It wants to come out and speak in its way. This is holy talking. You must not stop it. And from that celebration to a poem looking for Dr. Ishizuka in Tokyo. This is a doctor that saved my life, and it was in the first orthopedic hospital in Tokyo, and I went there to thank him in 2015. I never found him. I try to find you in old Megaroku, and I hear you collect thin porcelain. Here you have the last self-portrait of Picasso, deep, dark eye sockets. I found your essay yesterday in an orthopedic journal in English and Japanese. You write, feet are the body's second heart. They speak about everyone's inner illness or well-being. In your hospital, you developed x-rays of hurt people on a bus that crashed. Consider humans, I read in your article. Two legs stable us and share our body weight, but like objects, we really need three legs. We should be tripods or else have four legs like a cat's or the Tokyo Tower. You write That is, it is so surprising to see people whose big toe crosses over the second one without pain. I remember that first orthopedic hospital you founded in Tokyo. 50 years later, I search for you with a bowl for gratitude. Spread your toes wide and try to use them. I am reading, spend some time barefoot and do exercises. Use these toes to pick up objects. Use these toes to pick up objects. If I found you, I would thank you for that sage advice and for kindness, a jewel that lights our way all of the time in this life, especially now. Where do paintings begin? This poem is a response to that question, and its source is Van Gogh's paintings of old shoes. You ask, do I see any figures in these shoes so worn? Maybe they belong to Van Gogh himself. Were they his? Did they ever start to talk to him? And how do the crevices speak to us now? Was it early morning when he did his listening? Just brown and black. They speak of work and someone's hard life. I wonder what size they are, if they remember shinier days. Wonder if there was a time when it was a pleasure to put them on, or if they mind never being invited to dance or thought beautiful. The brown in these two shoes sits on the ground of yellow spent clouds, the laces folded over like a bent twig or half of a pair of handcuffs, bracelet part out. I am wondering how much further they can go, how much thought gets put into heels and tongues of a shoe or a body. And this is a poem about legs. Talking to my friend Mike, the wood sculptor, I ask about the dead wood he uses to make his tables. I need the truth, don't you? About how legs came to be, the ones thin like a dog's or fat and low like a hog's, one carved with a plant or an elephant on a drawer. Show me what you make to hold a tray on a door these days. I can think of one all around that sits with some gentle help, a lone egg from the corner store between the world and the floor. Is this a push from the unseen out there, trying so hard to talk or stand, no legs, and without the hint of toes? How does anyone manage this journey today? And right when people started to wear masks and nobody knew quite what to do and when to put them on and how and where, I wrote this and felt so comforted by it. The search. Outside my window, the world looks like yesterday, but you know it's not. Hard to know if I miss the unseen, come with messages and no gifts, how to go on. Spare the unborn, look for a mask that works, one for inside and outside, a Joseph mask of many colors, one that's reversible, one that can stand up, one for the unspeakable. And then I was thinking about information that everybody has about how to save something or how to save to tell something that might help someone that they didn't know about before. And out came how to help an injured bird. Again, I think a distinct reference to what is happening now. How to help an injured bird. Check out any bird that's lying sideways on the ground by your house. Fall is when many birds fly into windows. Now first prod the unresponsive bird's legs, You keep the bird warm. Remember, a great city sidewalk could leach out body temperatures. Put that bird in your pocket to warm it up. You shouldn't be worrying about all this disease. Find a little box or paper bag when birds go into a dark, quiet space they rest. So just wait. A brown paper bag is a perfect bird ambulance. Let the bird gather itself for an hour. Just sit there, wait until it becomes alert, then go take it to a park with a water source and let it go. Try never to throw the bird in the air, but just let him leave, it will. And you just try to sit there. And just two more poems I wanted to share with you that I've just come away from a celebration of myths and old stories. And I read this poem there, and just a little piece of it that I'll share with you. It's called Our Debt, and it's a chant poem for myth. See Apollo's perfect face in your dream. See it in Olympia, in fields of stone, doors everywhere, in every museum, and sing a lament for Adonis, who has a foot in Athens and a marble hand in Paris. But think about permission in your dream to be transformed into owl or kingfisher, quail or swallow, or some dubious hero standing for all of us in so many places where moon and person are always turning. Think about the mountains and wildflowers and celebrate what can heal and grow once more anywhere. And now, surprise, this is a poem that was written for all the poets who sat on the floor at the Pablo Neruda reading in 2005 at Hemingway's. And I'm dedicating it to Chris and Joan and everybody else. And as you know, he was a special work, Jimmy Savetic, and I won't go on about him, but that's how most of us remember him. And he never would tell anybody that they didn't have enough time to read. He let them go. So this is it. For all the poets who sat on the floor at that Pablo Neruda reading, 2005. How do you dress for the eclipse or get ready for darkness? Jimmy Savetic asks. Get down in the sand and thank the gods for a gift of life and trying to be better. When things happen, that's different. The camouflage of light tells you be there. Not enough to hug children unafraid of any kind of news. Not enough. I am sending the Neruda poster to you. A big poetry trumpet, Jimmy. It says Neruda, who wrote poems in green ink, the color of hope you knew something about. All of us would often be ashamed of our finest actions if the world understood some of the impulses that produced them. Even you and Pablo Neruda and I, but still we recognize the sacred. Borges' mother became his secretary. Dorothy Parker left all her money to the one and only Martin Luther King. Alice Sebald, a writer who loves every horse, gets up to write in the almighty dark and does so because she believes all unforgiving judges in her life are probably sound asleep. I think of the poems we read that day to people sitting on the floor. Jimmy. They are for Pablo's socks, a piano, the mango, and all of you. Thank you very much. It's such a pleasure to be here with you all and to watch it go on, the work, in gratitude.